Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Ari Gentry. Ari is the founding president of BioCurious. It's the first hackerspace for biology, and she's also a research manager at Institute for the Future. Some interesting facts. She shares a birthday with President Donald Trump and Sheriff Joe Arpaio. Are you kidding? Do they have the same birthday?
Same birthday. We actually, the Donald and I have a lot in common, actually.
I know that. Yeah.
You know that, really?
Yeah, I know you. So yeah, you and Donald, I mean, it's your personality-wise, you're indistinguishable from each other.
But really, our dad's name are both Fred, and we're both the children of grocery store owners, same birthday. And that might be where the similarities end, but who knows for the future.
That's cool. Yeah, I do know that you grew up in Arizona, and I knew this other information about you, that you are the daughter of a small town grocery store owning husband and wife team, and that you have 15 years experience running a cash register and 19 years bagging groceries.
Yep, I was basically born in the grocery store. Parents raised me there, so I was either putting stuff in my mouth or putting stuff in bags, but I'll count it as experience.
Do your parents still have the store?
Unfortunately, no. That's the dark side of the American dream, is that you can open something, but then when big box stores come in, it might not be so great for business. But they're all right now. They got to retire a little bit early and design themselves to live in the middle of the desert in Arizona, away from all civilization and box stores.
That's great.
Well, if anything life has taught me is that there's a very high chance that by the time you're 50, you'll be running a retail business somewhere.
Really?
Yeah. This is.
Are you running a retail business?
No, but my dad worked for a magazine and new media, and I had zero interest. I ran from that as far as I could, and look what happened.
I think you and Arian could open a really cool store together.
We could sell cool tools.
You absolutely could.
So what kinds of things would you put in the store?
Well, I have this great site for inspiration.
Could you give us four examples?
Some pre-infected Petri dishes from BioCurious.
You're really selling it, Mark. Thank you.
Well, other kinds of things, like give us your four cool tools.
Start into the four tools. Okay. So starting with the first, a nice little bit of inspiration is a website called nice.co, and that's spelled nice with two I's, NIICE.co.
Nice.
Nice. I have not heard it like that, but that's a better way to remember it than just saying nice. For my work at Institute for the Future, we're often trying to distill these nebulous concepts about the future into images and into words that people can understand. And it's really important that we get the visual part down right, but most sites aren't really great for visual inspiration, like AI. Kevin, you've written tons about AI, and you too, Mark. So try to type AI into Google Images, and what do you get? It's like the same image you see on every blog post, every article, like a robotic arm that's doing something creative. You see the same stock photos of like a bunch of white blobs on a black background. It's not good enough. But Nice is this incredible site that shows you really creative imagery and often a lot of original art from artists, which is great because sometimes it can be hard to access the people doing really interesting creative work. And so Nice is meant, I believe, for designers and for design firms to do premium mood boards. What I use it for is simply like a search engine. So I'll go to the website, I'll type in something weird like AI or, as Mark mentioned, pre-infected Petri dishes. And it'll turn out a bunch of different stuff that I wasn't thinking about. So just to play around with it, I typed in tools, and you can try this all at home, but see the really different stuff that comes out. And the great thing about this site is it can make me associate new concepts, actually, that I hadn't before. And it's a really neat way to think about the future visually.
And how does the economics of it work, either for them or for the user?
Yeah, if all users were like me, it would not work at all, because I just go in there and search for something and leave. But they do have premium models. So it is a tiered, they have tiered pricing plans. So the pro starts at $9 a month for a team member, and then you can do it for your entire firm, but you have to call them to get in touch.
What you get out of the premium that you don't get as a user like yourself just visiting?
Yeah, since I'm on their website, I can tell you, rather than three boards for free, you get unlimited boards, unlimited mood boards, that is. You can edit those, export them. You can do two-way Dropbox sync, and you can upload your own images. And apparently there are some other custom search sources that you wouldn't get in the free version.
And so can a board have like unlimited images?
Good question. I'm not totally sure, but I don't see any reason why not. A good comparison to this site is Pinterest. So I think of it like if Pinterest and Google Images somehow merged and formed something much more beautiful, it might look something like this. I think for a person like me who's using it, who's having a really hard time creatively, you've hit some kind of roadblock. This is a really great site to use their search engine. But if you're trying to maybe like my fiance Arian, who open source for Blue Bottle, he uses mood boards a lot with his team. So he might want to try the enterprise level where he's collecting his ideas and sharing that with his design team and with their architects and other sorts of decision makers.
So Google has, you know, pretty smart algorithms for finding things, including Google image search. How is nice delivering better? Is it because it's also like Pinterest where it's some curation, human curation going on, or people are pinning, so to speak, things that they find, and they have an additional layer of reference that enables them to deliver these unexpected images?
Nice. Yeah, the benefit of Nice is that it's super curated. So it's pretty clear that there's a lot of human searching going on in the back end. And actually, it's not a perfect site at all, because you can't type in a long phrase and get results. So there's still some work to do. You have to think very basically. Like if you want to get inspiration for the color purple, you know, you can type that in and get a bunch of different ideas from it. But it's not as algorithmically based as Google image search.
Are the images like, are they cleared for use?
Flickr can sometimes be complicated because you have to search for Creative Commons license, or you have to ask the original photographer for use, permission for use. So a lot of the art that Nice links to is original art, and they kind of want you to share it. I'm not sure if every one of their images is like that, but every one that I've clicked on, it leads me back to the artist page. And I think that's really nice in and of itself, so that I get to support people who are doing this stuff instead of... Sometimes I feel like I'm taking advantage of creative work that's out there. And I like that I'm going back to kind of pay homage to the creator.
So some of these images they may charge some fee for, and then you would work directly with the artist for those. Is that how it works?
I haven't come across that yet. I've been using it just for inspiration.
I love this. It's so cool. I just found a really cool children's cough syrup image. I posted it to the the Google Doc so you can see it.
What search term did you use?
Like a little, it's like a little astronaut. I don't know. I just stumbled on it. I searched artificial intelligence and then just ended up like clicking through to it.
This looks like something that Mark would have painted himself. Maybe you have painted this. I don't know.
You might have forgotten.
Maybe I did. I can't remember anymore. So our next one is called double eyelid tape. This looks like a special.
Have you guys heard about this before?
No.
Okay. I wondered.
Well, if it's what I think it is, this has been a long ongoing thing in Asia for forever.
What do you think it is?
Well, it's to add a more Caucasian looking eyelid for Asians who have the epicanthus fold, which is the thing we think of in the crude terms as a slanted eye. Is really just a way that the eyelid folds over the eye, and having a double eyelid, having two eyelids somehow is a mark of beauty, and you know, in a lot of these cultures.
Yeah, you got it spot on. So basically, eyelid tape or double eyelid tape is tape for your eyelids, and it's nothing more complicated than that. But
well, it's tape instead of surgery. I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are women who are getting surgery actually to create that fold in the eye. And it is a mark of beauty, but there is, I think, a really practical reason for using the tape and for having that fold. If you consider being able to wear makeup without it smudging, really practical, as I do. So you may not have had this experience where you look in the mirror and think, if only I could have a larger, more pronounced fold in my eyelids. But it's actually a really common issue. And it's not just for Asians and not just for Asian women. There are many different people who might have uneven eyelids, for example, whether it's genetic or they may have an illness which causes puffiness in one eyelid and not the other. So for me, I've actually had eyelids that changed throughout my life. So I'm half Chinese, and as a child, I didn't have much of a fold, but as I grew older, I sort of developed one. But I would notice some days I would kind of have no crease at all, where the bottom part of your eyelid is kind of covered, or hooded is the term that is most commonly used, by the upper part of the eyelid. And so you may not have, again, this issue where you put on eyeshadow and eyeliner in the morning, but think about if you're putting that on and then just by opening your eyes, it gets completely smudged. So it's kind of like writing something down with marker and handing it to somebody only to realize that you smudged it off with your thumb. It can be really frustrating. And so imagine that on your face and you don't even know it. So it can actually lead to some embarrassment and some self-confidence issues. So this tape is literally a thin strip of adhesive that you use another cool tool to place on your eyelid. You kind of stretch it across this tool that looks like a small fork with only two tongs. And then you sort of stab into the back of your eyelid, so pressing it against the top of your eyeball, where you might have your natural crease or where you want your crease to be. And it's double-sided tape that sticks itself back in there and creates a crease. You can wear makeup pretty normally. It's a little bit uncomfortable. If you've ever put tape on your arm for some reason, I mean, it's just like that. It's tape on your skin. It's not sophisticated. But it totally changed the way, well, my routine, it changed the way that my eyes looked when I started using it. I have one thing in particular where one eye just kind of droops. So it can stay they can stay the same for months at a time, and then one day I'll wake up and my left eye is hooded, and then the right is not.
So do you keep tape on for a month?
You keep the tape on for most of the day, and if you read articles about how to use this tape, most people will kind of train their eyelids by using this tape for about 3 months. So it's kind of like wearing braces, or it's kind of like brushing your hair in one direction every single day, and then your hair starts to naturally fall in that direction.
Oh, so this like is like braces? I mean, after a while, then you don't need to use it anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So after about 3 months, your eyelids tend to stay that way. And so you might need to redo it over time, like what's happening with me right now. But yeah, all of a sudden you can start naturally like having eyelid creases.
It's like you crease the paper and the crease stays in some ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like reverse Botox.
Right. And so this is like an alternative to surgery, in the sense that you are making something, you're trying to make something permanent or semi-permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really cheap way to experiment with changing your looks, both for men and women. I've seen YouTube videos of both genders playing around with this to make your eyes appear more round. Or
I would be interested in going the other direction. I'd be thinking it'd be cool because my boys have just one eyelid.
That would be cool, Kevin.
Do you think they could do that?
You want hooded eyelids?
Yeah. That would look cool.
Yeah. We could probably tape them down.
Yeah, I think I want to try that.
Next time I see you, I'm going to bring a roll of tape and we'll figure this out.
Okay, well, that's a very unexpected one, but that's really cool.
I love it, Aaron. You're picking really cool stuff here. Stuff we've never heard of.
What else do you have in your embryonic tool store?
I was going to ask, actually, where's all your beauty products? Who's your beauty editor for Cool Tools?
Unfortunately.
I see more of these. Your DIY-hooded lids. All right, well, I can always feed you more stuff.
Yes.
All right, so the next cool tool up is called a sacroiliac belt. A really great name.
Catchy.
I like these things that are what they are. So the sacroiliac belt is literally a belt that tightens around your hips, or it's meant to tighten up your sacroiliac joints. So the sacroiliac joints are they're next to the bottom of the spine. They're below the lumbar spine and above the tailbone. And so it's believed that disruptions to the joint or instability or lack of mobility can cause a lot of lower back pain, hip pain, groin pain. And so something that I've struggled with for most of my life is really bad hypermobility, joint hypermobility.
Does that mean? That you're too flexible?
I'm too flexible. And most people think, oh, that's so cool. But you're meant to be kind of a standard amount of flexible. So one thing that happens is if I push the buttons on the microwave, my finger will bend backwards. So it doesn't give me a lot of leverage when I'm doing physical things that require me to put pressure on a joint. And that's a lot of things. It's like playing the piano, typing on a keyboard. I've learned to be very careful with that sort of thing. But the trouble is you put a lot of pressure on your hips. So they get a lot of the pressure from walking, from standing. And sometimes when I'm sleeping or when I'm even sitting down, something there can slip. And I'm not exactly sure what it was, but the times that it did happen, I couldn't walk. If I had to get up from bed and go to the bathroom, I'd be hobbling. There have even been times like in my 20s where I had to crawl on the floor because I couldn't walk.
Wow.
So instead of pursuing some really serious change or surgery, I actually found this belt, and because it tightens, it creates that that stability decreases my mobility, which gives me a sort of new normal. And it really helps with cutting down the pain. And on a bad day, it's actually the difference between me being able to get up and walk the dog or having to lay in bed complaining.
Oh, man. So do you wear this like under a shirt or a blouse?
I try to be bold and just wear it over my pants.
Go that's full fine. Superman. I've never seen you wearing it though at work or anything.
No. So it's usually is the worst when I get up from bed. So even though I shouldn't be embarrassed to wear it, honestly, I am a little bit. And wearing it under clothes makes you just look like you have a huge muffin top. So it's not super flattering. But I think what's really great about this is it's just such a simple thing. And most of us, when something goes wrong or when we experience pain, we're really looking for something that's probably more complex than we really need, or we need to go to the doctor. And this isn't something that I or other people who have hypermobility or hypomobility have all the time. This is just something I have to wear like in the moment. And sometimes just wearing it for a couple of hours is all I need. But I think there might be people out there who have some low back pain. They might have been injured while they're lifting something heavy or have a little bit of scoliosis like I do. And they might be the people that are just like pressing their hand on the back or the small of their back when they're walking around. So I'd encourage anybody who's experienced just like a little bit of something, you don't know what is going on, just to try one of these things. And I use one that I got on Amazon called Protec Athletics SI belt. It's about $25, but honestly, like if you have a yoga belt, or if you have one of those cool little kids belts, the ones that don't have any holes, they just kind of loop through. I'm not describing this right. There's two loops and you pull the material through that and you just tighten at will. So put one of those around your SI joint and just see if it helps. Often that's all you need.
Yeah, I think if you're going to wear on the outside, they should work out some really day glow colors or tie dye or something.
Or like a fanny pack version.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, yeah, that's why you guys do cool tools. Let's see what needs to be the next iteration of this.
It can have pocket protectors on it.
There you go. I love it. So you have one more.
Yeah. I do have one
this
more.
It's called Fancy Hands.
Mm-hmm. Fancy Hands.
This one is not like how it sounds. Like Mark, who does magic, has fancy hands. But this Fancy Hands is a website and platform that has a bunch of people who will do small tasks for you on the back end. So as a user, you pay some monthly fee and you buy a package of tasks. So these are things that can be done in 20 minutes by somebody who may not be an expert in the field. And it's things like making reservations, doing a little bit of online research, finding doctors that go work with your insurance, for example. And the story behind this is that, like, for years I've been reading that you should outsource your life. You shouldn't be doing it. That's totally a Tim Ferriss thing.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's like, I'll read those books and I think, oh, I need to stop doing everything. I need to outsource all the things I don't like doing. And so I went to the work of finding a virtual assistant. I interviewed people from the Philippines, from Nicaragua, from all these different places. And I ended up trying out a few virtual assistants. And I had nothing for them to do. And I felt terrible. I was like a whole person just for me. I could never. And I realized I didn't want to give up on that idea of having another person help me with this. And that's a really hard thing for me to do, is like desegment what I need to do when I tend to take kind of responsibility for everything. But I realized the importance of like leveraging your ability, your time by getting help. So I figured out, or I tried a few more experiments. I tried things like Fiverr, which is another cool tool. So short segue, it's a site where you can pay people $5 for different services and often creative services like make me a logo. Fancy Hands just does all different sorts of stuff. And it's perfect for me and who couldn't really figure out how to outsource my life yet, because I could experiment a little bit here and a little bit there without feeling like I had someone's livelihood in my hands. And so I'll use Fancy Hands for things that I don't like to do. And the number one thing I don't like to do is be on the phone and make appointments or tell Comcast that my bill is wrong this month. It's just one of those things that I stress about. So every time I have to be on the phone, now I outsource it to Fancy Hands. They have all my information. They're linked to my calendar. They have my credit card on file. They have who's my insurance provider and things like that. And they can always call me into the phone call if they need to. And sometimes that happens with doctors or hospital systems. But yeah, so far it's been perfect for me. And it helped me figure out what I need help with and what it's like to work with other people virtually. And now I actually have a virtual assistant that I'm working with very well.
I think this is a really fantastic notion and a great tool, but I have a couple of questions that maybe other people would have, and that is, do you wind up working with, say, the same person when you call back? Say you have them do your doctor's appointments, and then you call back a month later or 2 months later. Is it the same person, or is it just whoever's on call at that moment?
It's whoever's on call. And that's in order to get the fastest response to your task. Sometimes they do this within minutes.
How is the training them pretty fast? Because that would be my one concern, is the amount of time that you would need to explain the problem to them versus the amount of time, talking directly to the agent that you want to work with. If it was a new thing that you hadn't done before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'll give you a couple of examples of ways that I've used them. And I've been surprised, pleasantly surprised, at how little onboarding we really needed to do. So one example is for the board of BioCurious. We're having a dinner soon. And I asked Fancy Hands, hey, I need to do a board dinner. I'm looking for a place that's good for groups, that's pretty quiet, good food, good ratings, but also reasonably priced. Send me 5 places in the city with the reviews and a link and the contact information. And that's on the easier side. They'll send information directly from Yelp. But on the other side, I was helping a friend do some research on pricing for his biotech website. So on the site, he sells a bunch of different stuff you would need if you're doing DIY projects or if you work in a lab, and he's trying to accommodate biohackers and individuals. And usually prices are fairly outrageous for small amounts that an individual might need, and he's trying to fill that gap. So we're doing some pricing research for stuff that sounds pretty clinical, but we were able to put all of that in a spreadsheet and say, like, here are the sites I'd like you to check for competitive prices. And they may not have known anything about what we were pricing. But if you give them the resources to do a good job, it all comes together pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Have you encountered sort of the limits of what you can do here? Is there a job that either they were unable to do in a timely manner, or that you didn't even attempt because you thought that it was sort of out of their purview.
Right. I mean, a good rule of thumb is that if you are really looking for an expert opinion, this isn't the place to do it. If you want someone to do minor research, so kind of a Google research, reading a few articles and then sending you back the highlights of those articles, that works. But if you're asking someone to read through scientific papers and ask you, like, what are the best peer-reviewed papers on this medicine that my doctor prescribed me, like, that would be inappropriate.
But this is closer to kind of like a TaskRabbit thing, but maybe more virtual.
Yeah, TaskRabbit for virtual tasks.
Right.
And I've given talks about fancy hands to busy executives. And the reason I did that is because I asked executives at Fortune 500 companies, like, how do you experiment at work? Like, what do you think an experiment is? And a guy at an oil and gas company said, oh, I can't do an experiment for less than $1 million. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. Like, you don't have an experimental mindset at all. Like, thinking about things that you can do for $1 million is just not a useful strategy because you're going to discount anything that could be done for less. And so the reason I brought this up is to get people thinking in that experimental mindset and to think, is there something on your list, something that you haven't done that somebody could probably do in 20 minutes and you've just been putting it off because you were busy? And I gave people time to think about that and had them write lists. And that became the basis for things that they might outsource to a service like Fancy Hands. And it was the same kind of activity I realized was missing in all of the advice about getting a virtual assistant. Was the thought exercise, like, what am I missing? What's in my life that I need to be doing that I'm just not? And so this is that tool to help you when, like, you're worried, when you're feeling overwhelmed, kind of reflect on that a little bit, like, why am I feeling overwhelmed? And for me, a lot of times it's just like, oh, I need to do that and I need to do that. And then I realize, oh, I should just ask someone from Fancy Hands to do it.
Right. I need to set up auto pay on my credit card, whatever, X. So,
mm-hmm. Right. Can you use it to cancel services too?
Mm-hmm. I want to cancel my Comcast.
Yeah, exactly. I really do want to cancel my cable TV
negotiate.
And just have internet service.
So, yeah, you can totally use it to cancel services. You don't even have to tell them the phone number. You might have to give them some identifying information if they don't already have it on file. But I think everyone should use Fancy Hands and say, hey, can you call Comcast and try to negotiate
That's
down
a great
my rate?
Idea.
Can you call my credit card and negotiate yeah. down my rate? Just yeah. use it to improve every aspect of your financial
life. It can
pay
for itself quite quickly if you do that.
Yeah, yeah. If you have five requests, one out of every five requests is just to reduce my payment somewhere on your paper.
Okay, so I think you said it's about $5 per task, and that gives you up to 20 minutes. And you pay in like a monthly thing. You can get like five tasks a month for $6, and then you get a break if you order more. That's really cool. I am going to try this out, Ari.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really great, great, great idea, and I think it can be done in different ways. This looks like a pretty good combination, and it's certainly worth trying for a couple of months for anybody to see if they can actually remove all those sticky points that, and because I think psychologically you gain more than the 5 times 20, which is what that's an hour and a half. You probably gain 3 or 4 hours in total.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're hacking your own approach right. toward productivity. And right. that's what's been most valuable for me.
Well, that's a great suggestion. Thank you.
That's
I hadn't
really
heard of
cool.
it.
So Ari, you started a new website, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with my friend Alexandra Carmichael. of Cure Together, Quantified Self, Ubiome, and other fame. So we started a website and blog called myhappytools.com, and we're going to post weekly updates with reviews of our happy tools, of stories that we've learned, relationship lessons, and we're getting questions from our community, questions that they have about happiness and life and family. And we're going to do our best to answer those using things rooted in science. And so that's the basis of what we're trying to share is lessons or our own quest for happiness that are based in science. And so take out all of the things that may be questionable, maybe snake oil, maybe just a little bit too woo-woo for us. And this started because she and I get together and we're always talking about life and something that we're struggling with. And then we help each other or we talk about some new product, new app, new technique that we're using or people that we're talking to, and then go away feeling better. So we just decided to start putting that out there and to share it with other people.
It looks so great. Beautiful design and a really interesting subject. Also, I just signed up. You have a newsletter too.
You can go there and sign up for our newsletter. And when you've got enough cool tools, you can check out Happy Tools.
That sounds good. You have the Emotional Toolbox Starter Kit, what you need to better balance and enjoy your life. This is something like it's an infographic that it looks like you put together, right? This is like a My Happy Tools exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we had a meeting actually at the Institute for the Future, and we invited a bunch of people to come and share their happy tools. And so we found that they sort of group together in natural ways, like tech tools, like biology tools, and spirit tools. And so we put some of our favorites, and then what the community came up with, and shared that all together on the blog.
That's
nice.
Great. Well, cool. That's what I see in the biology tools. You have psychedelic therapeutics.
Yeah. Ayahuasca came up.
I'm actually interviewing Ayelet Waldman next week, the woman who wrote that book called A Really Good Day about her month-long experience microdosing LSD at a kind of almost a sub-perceptual level where you don't hallucinate or almost you don't really feel anything. And I haven't finished the book, but so far it seemed to have pretty remarkable effects.
Is that something you're going to try?
I don't think so, because I feel like I'm pretty happy already, but I'm glad she's trying it. All right, well, Ari, this has been a blast. This is like a really great interview.
Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. Thank you for all the great suggestions, lots of things that we didn't know about.
Thanks for having me.